All right. My hole is slightly downhill, technical, road on the entire right side of the fairway, but there is a slope. The slope is going from right to left. A lot of people are this hole in particular. You never know what somebody's going to throw off the tee. They could throw flippy backhand, roller, forehand. The basket is tucked up a little bit to the right. You have a few guardian trees. There's wood chips underneath the basket.
Do we know the par?
It's a par four.
Par four.
Sorry. And what else can I give you?
The smell.
The left side, sometimes it can feel a little sticky. You're getting to the part of the course where mosquitoes might bite you. If it's rainy, you could slip because it's muddy. There's bushes on the last 30% of the hole down to the left. It runs parallel with another par four.
Oh, I got it.
Is this 16 at Maple Hill?
No. No, it's Ledgestone.
No.
No?
No. No,
that's a par three. Dang it. Okay.
Okay.
Road on the right.
I'm going to give it away by saying this. You cross the road to play this hole.
This is European Open. This is the beast
13.
Hole
13.
12?
No.
It's not no. 12.
You crossed the road multiple times on that course.
You're true. You're right. Wait, you crossed the
downhill,
road once?
Downhill.
A four. Right to left. Yep. Joey's got it.
Wait,
welcome to Europe, everybody.
Hole four at the Beast.
My brain is buffering.
Well, the one with the super tight gap off the tee, the road on the right side, right to left sloping green, bushes at the end. It's so dumb when you know which hole it is, and then you realize
the downhill got.
Perfect.
Wait, that hole's downhill a bit.
Yeah,
I guess it's a little downhill. Yeah, yeah. It goes down. I could have said it goes down and up
this
just
cliff
a little bit.
We're throwing down.
Slightly downhill.
Wow, welcome back.
Welcome back to Crush Pepper, episode 21. We are on a different continent. This is the first ever Crush Pepper podcast.
International.
And 21 episodes. We're legal now. Well, I suppose if we're in Europe, we were legal four episodes ago.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for being legal.
This is the longest break we have had between episodes. The last time we recorded, unfortunately, it was about as humid as it is now, but only 8,000 or 9,000 miles away.
And about 25 degrees hotter.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But man, a lot of things have happened, and I think that's where we should start. You guys took 2 weeks off, and I want to know what happened in those 2 weeks. I've actually kind of waited to ask this question because we did our practice round this morning, and I waited till now to actually get the fresh answers live for you guys, Scoville units.
The Scovies, I gotta think back. Our last podcast, did we record like the first? It was the first day of the DMC. So
yeah.
What has happened since then?
We played the DMC.
The DMC. Well, in terms of my tournament recap, I felt like I played good, but my score didn't represent me playing well. And that's such a cheesy thing to say because people say it all the time. It's like, yeah, you sucked. And that didn't really feel like the case for me. Round one, I got to 11 under at one point on hole 16. And then I took a 7 on 17 and catapulted my way back to about minus eight, and then bogeyed the final hole and got to minus seven and finished the tournament at minus 15. So not great. Haven't played around a disc golf since the DMC other than the two practice rounds I've gotten here in Estonia. The big thing that happened for me in the past couple weeks is I took a trip, Ritana and I, to Italy. And it was incredible. Went to Milan and Lake Como, 8 days. Decided not to play the Norwegian events because nothing against those events at all. I'd love to play them. Great courses, but it would have just packed the schedule way too tight for what I was looking for. And I would say, compared to years past, I'm playing a lot more disc golf than I normally do. Like, I've had injuries, and usually I take a little bit more time just because I've had to rehab my shoulder. So this year has been like the most grindy I felt, and I'm not even playing as much as I probably should be. But taking a little vacation over Italy was what the soul needed. Really incredible. Checked out Milan for 4 days. Got to see a band that I've been wanting to see for almost a decade, which is crazy to say. Future Islands, they put on an incredible show. Did some shopping, saw some old Italian architecture. Tried to eat the food. The food was incredible, but unfortunately I have a gluten and dairy intolerance. So I was eating bread and it made me feel absolutely terrible. I felt like I was pregnant after I ate bread. And a lot of people report going to Europe and are able to eat gluten. Unfortunately, not me. So I had to change things up and cook things at my Airbnb, but it was still good. The tomatoes were probably the best tomatoes I've ever had in Italy. The fruit, the quality of the ingredients there just felt that much higher. So really incredible 8 days in Italy, and took a nasty, sticky Ryanair flight from...
Oh, shout out Ryanair. I've been there.
It's the spirit of Europe, I believe. And
that's a good sentence right there.
The spirit of Europe. Luckily,
that's the episode name.
Yeah, I think we all have some things to say about our flights. Oh yeah, my baggage got delayed going to Italy. I didn't get my bag for 4 days. And I think one of my unsolicited advices on a previous episode was get an AirTag. And if it wasn't for my AirTag, I feel like I may have had to wait even longer, because I was able to take screen caps of where it was and send it to the airline and move it along. So the only good thing about it is, pro tip, if you are waiting or have delayed baggage, the airline is responsible and they need to reimburse you for all of your necessary expenses. So if you don't have clothes, if you don't have cosmetic products, keep your receipt and submit a claim with the airline, because they should reimburse you up to a certain point. So I got some free clothes going to Italy, but I had to wait for my bag, which was really frustrating. But all in all, great trip here in Estonia now, practicing for the second major of the year. How was your 3 weeks, Simon Lazat?
Des Moines was okay. If you want an in-depth review of that tournament, then check out my YouTube channel. I talk about everything and anything on there. But I played, it was a total meh event for me. Never really got anything going. Wasn't horrible. I cashed. I don't even know what place I got. It feels too long ago, like 30 something. Not good, but I was excited to get home. These summer months are really nice in Massachusetts. Did a lot of family stuff, hanging out with the kiddos and my wife, just having a good time.
Did you play a
tournament? I did not play at all. Actually, my goal was to putt every day during these 2 weeks leading up to the two majors in Europe, because I felt like it could help potentially. But then I hurt my wrist. My right wrist got... I thought it was going to be a serious injury, but thank God it turned out to be a mild injury. But I went to the hospital and got x-rays and all that stuff, and thankfully nothing was hurt, and with the intake of too much ibuprofen, I think I can play now, which is nice. And I putted every day for 1 week, and then last week I didn't get to play at all because my wrist hurt. So that was that. But one exciting thing that happened, actually, I got a call in Des Moines that a local farm in Massachusetts wants a disc golf course, and I get to design it. And I think that might be a kind of a thing. I mean, in Massachusetts, I think there's 3 or 4 farms that have a disc golf course. And not only golf courses are adding disc golf, I see more and more now that I think farms are starting to want disc golf courses because it attracts more people to their farms. Hmm. And everyone who enters a farm is a potential customer at their farm stand buying their veggies or whatever products they might sell. So this is really exciting. This is pretty close to my house and potentially might be my new home course. I've spent a couple hours there last week, and it's a pretty cool little property. They have a little pond, they have fields, they have some wooded sections, and farm golf, I think, might be the future of...
You're getting pretty close to being able to put in your Instagram bio, Simon Lazat, professional disc golfer, professional course designer.
I know. I'm just building my course design brand and building experience. So when I retire from playing professionally, I can get my 3 to 5 course designs a year, and that's going to be my job.
Can you fix the tour courses too while you're at it?
I could fix them from my point of view, and probably about half the people would like it, another half would hate it. Mm-hmm. that's disc golf course design for you. But no, I'm excited, looking forward to that. If anyone wants to know how I injured my wrist, it was playing golf. I actually got to play 2 rounds of golf in these off weeks. I love playing golf. I want my life to be doing whatever I want plus playing golf every day. I think golf is the best game ever invented. So yeah, middle of the fairway shot, I lined it up feeling good and chunked my 6-iron so hard into the ground like I've never done it before, kind of completely out of nowhere. I'm not good at golf, so I shank the ball all the time, but this was hopefully a one of one kind of incident. And the pain that shot through my right hand was crazy. I was able to finish the round. I think this happened on like hole 13-ish or something. So I played through the pain. Usually if you hit a bad shot, it'll hurt for a couple minutes and then kind of go away. And I thought that's kind of what it was, but never went away. And the next day, it was so painful that I had to choose to go to the hospital to make sure everything's okay, because I had this Europe trip coming up. And obviously, my right hand is my family's insurance in a way.
That's a good
episode. So I shouldn't really mess around with that. And other than that, yeah, just hanging out with the fam.
How are they?
They're pretty awesome. We've been spared from illness for about a month now, which is nice, because since Mia was born over a year ago, she's basically catching some kind of virus or cold on a bi-weekly basis. Like, it's been so exhausting just to, like, I went to almost every single tournament this year with something going on, like health-wise, just always congested or coughing or losing my voice. Like, there was always just something. And now it's been like 3 or 4 weeks where we just feeling good.
And it's going to be another 3 weeks because you're gone.
And hopefully I managed to not catch anything here. You know, travel days are always risky. Being stuck in a metal tube in the sky for hours is always not really the best thing if you're trying to stay healthy. But yeah, I had a terrible travel experience yesterday or 2 days ago as well. I lost my baggage as well. I still don't know where it is or when it's going to be here. And it has all my backup discs.
It'd be nice to have an AirTag.
All
right
my
now.
Clothes. I don't have an AirTag in it. My shoes. So first thing this morning, we went to a little sports store and got some shoes for me and an extra t-shirt that I'm wearing right now. It says Nike Pro, just so people know I'm a pro. Mm-hmm.
Make a claim. Free shirt.
I think I already got rid of the receipts.
Oh my gosh.
For what I bought. But yeah, we'll see. I had to completely rebook my flight, and I don't know what's going to happen with my original flight. Because now my return flight, I also lost that because I didn't show up to my initial flight. There's all this mess that happened. But we'll see how much money I actually lost by doing this.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for those updates. But I'm glad to be back in Estonia. This was probably top three favorite events for me last year. I'm really impressed with the venue, and this is probably the most professionally run by an official like event team event that we have in the sport.
It's arena disc golf.
It is totally arena disc golf. And I actually listened to a podcast with Matthias, who is the TD here, and he was on the Upshot last week. Do you guys listen to that or no?
Nope.
No, but he basically spoke straight out of my heart. This is something I've been saying for years, is that there's two things in disc golf. Either we play on okay course in a great location, like where many people live, so many people can come watch, or we play on a great course in the middle of nowhere where almost no one shows up. And Matthias just said he thinks we need to bring disc golf to the people and not ask the people to come to disc golf, because clearly that's not really working. So I think it would be way better for us and the sport and the tour, on a financial level at least, if we played on worse courses or smaller courses in better locations. I think an event somewhere near downtown Chicago would be way better for the sport than an event in Peoria. One of the best courses we have.
Morton, Illinois.
Morton, Illinois. Yeah, I mean, Ledgestone, you know, they've done an amazing job of all the money they've put out and all the sponsors they've gathered and the attention they've got. But still, I mean, only so many people are going to drive 2 hours from Chicago to Peoria to come watch, or its surrounding cities. And there's only so many people in Peoria. So,
I mean, look at like the best events of the year. Obviously, this is one of them. Portland Open, Open at Austin. It's like, yeah, you could keep bringing them off.
But I would argue that the tour has made that effort in the last few years. Yeah. No, I totally agree. And I would also argue, like, not against Matthias, but just more like, it's easy to say that when your country gives you the Estonian equivalent of the National Mall to play on. I mean, the idea of trying to get the permission to do, like, okay, Chicago, for example. Let's just say Jackson Park, huge park in downtown Chicago, right on the lake. I was actually there in 2022, and I installed and led clinics with the Paul Macbeth Foundation. We put in a course right there, right up against a TGR redesigned golf course in downtown, right on the skyline. And just to get 9 holes right on like kind of the scraps left over by the golf course was like an insane pull just to get the permission. And we basically had to go through the Jackson Parks Public Works Commission and convince them that disc golf was good for the local youth. And they obviously like understood and bought it, and we got the approval to do it. But it is really easy for an Estonian event manager to say bring disc golf to the people, when essentially every single door that they want is open for disc golf in this country. I mean, you're not going to get a no. 2 years ago at the European Championships, the guy who handed out the trophy to the winners was the president of Estonia. So you have no blockades to do anything.
Yeah, for Worlds, they're planning to put a course in Kadriorg, the park, which is equivalent to playing disc golf in Washington, D.C. under...
Yeah.
Like, is that the park pass here with the scooters on the way
like
here?
That's like the presidential park.
Right? It looks so beautiful.
It'd be like the La Luvaliak is like basically the song festival grounds, and that is equivalent to like the Lincoln Memorial and its surrounding area. And then
I totally agree with that. And I think where Matthias was coming from is that the course last year got a lot of bad feedback that it's too easy, too small, too short, sure. and too
then that's
boring.
That's the adequate response from him. Then.
But he was like, the course should be secondary. Mm-hmm. Like downtown Chicago, or not downtown, but Chicago as like a area has disc golf courses.
Right.
So we don't even need special permission anyway. We just go to one of those courses that already exist. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what he was alluding to, which I would agree with. And I also, on top of that, I think that a smaller course with 1,000 people on it will look way more crowded and exciting than a massive course with 1,000 people on it, where there's like 50 people scattered over there, 100 people over there, and we're, I don't know, I just, for some reason, my vision for disc golf is that the crowd needs to be like crammed in and as close to us as possible, so it looks just like a party,
like European Open.
Like it looks like something you want to be a part of. European Open is a great example of that.
It's probably the best example that
and it's
exists.
One of the shortest courses we play all year.
Yep. No, and I mean, it's sort of, the debate comes down to like, do you want these? And I think because you have a tour, that's the beauty of it, you can have both on a tour. Not every event has to be European Disc Golf Festival, but at the same vein, not every event has to be a Northwood Black. Like, I think there's room on the tour for good courses in the middle of nowhere, like a few of them that are great. And then, because you can't just make it all, then you're going to get pros who are going to start to say, well, are we just curating this just for the fans? Like, do we not care about like the player?
Why would they care about the player?
Well, I'm just saying, like, if you're prioritizing a crappy course for the sole purpose of in-person spectators being double or triple, then you're prioritizing the fan experience over the player experience. If you're prioritizing,
it's just so tough because right now the waters are so muddied in disc golf of what it should be.
I think it can be a mist, but that's the thing. It can be both.
We should have Aaron Gossage on the podcast.
And this week, it is about the fan experience. And I think if every player goes into this week with that in mind, that, hey, the staff and the guys running this event, and I am fortunate enough to know Ralph and Silver. I don't know Matthias as well, but I know Ralph and Silver pretty well. I know how much effort they put into not just the organizing of the tournament itself, but I mean, this is, and it's almost funny to say that it's the most well-run event on tour with what's coming in 2 weeks. I mean, it's almost a slap in the face to UC, but at the same time, these guys prioritize the stadium in a way that even the guys at European Open don't quite hit that level. And I mean, part of it is the venue. But it's a super, super impressive place to play disc golf. I was honored to play here last year, walking out under the
Jumbotron.
Yeah, with your pose. We all did our poses today.
Yep.
For the camera. And
zero cringe.
You've got your player badge that gets scanned at the gate. I mean, it feels very official at this tournament. And just for a little bit of context about the Lauluvaliak, the entire country of Estonia culturally kind of hinges or sits on this tradition of song festivals, which have been taking place in Tallinn in this general area since 1896. And the nice big statue on top of the hill past Hole One's basket is one of the famous original composers of a lot of these songs. And I particularly have a little bit of extra knowledge, having a partner who is Estonian. I've come to learn a lot more about that area, and it is essentially the most culturally significant like 10 or 15 acres in the entire country. And if you read about the Estonian traditions, you will see that they are not a very religious country. In fact, they are one of the least religious countries in the world. And to kind of even prove that point, a lot of Estonians in the older generations, marriage is not really like a common thing. It's only become commonplace in Estonia through Hollywood. And it is this culture and the singing festivals that really kind of make up a lot of what Estonian people kind of allude to and identify with, is this nationalism, because there isn't this like overarching religion, and it's just extremely special to the people of this country, this tradition of singing. And every 5 years, almost 100,000 people gather at the Lauluvaliak for a weekend. And there's singing festival and dancing festival in the National Stadium. And that was last week. Last week, at the course we're playing, there was 100,000 people. And I saw some pictures and videos of the mud that ensued. I think basically in the areas of near the amphitheater, all of the grass was completely tamped out.
Yeah,
totally gone. And they have come in, as they do. I've understood that this is the common theme. If they lose the grass, is to replace it with new sod, but they've obviously sped it up for us. Super, super impressed with how they've really flipped this venue around to get ready in basically less than a week for us to be here.
Yeah, I played yesterday and I had no idea about any of that. And my first inclination was like, oh, it's just a little bit muddy. But now that I know what happened, it's pretty remarkable the amount of work that they did to get it to where it is now.
It was like ankle deep mud through basically 118, 8, 17, and a lot of the holes behind the amphitheater. So the idea that we're allowed to use this space to play disc golf is really crazy to me, just considering how important it is to that entire country. And the thought of also adding the presidential grounds for the 2029 World Championships is just sort of unthinkable in any other country outside of maybe Finland. So that's really cool.
It's a good example. If you're trying to get disc golf into your local park, you can just bring up Estonia. It's like, hey, you have this park and you're not going to let me play in it? In Estonia, we play on their national landmark, and it's cool.
It is.
Yeah, I remember I was here in 2017 for the first time, and we played in the same park at the festival grounds, and I like couldn't care less. I was like, yeah, this is kind of cool, but all right. But now that I've matured and I'm a 32-year-old dad, I'm like, it feels like, wow, this is really special, really cool, and I can actually really appreciate it now, especially mm-hmm. that I've worked with course design a bit and trying to like get courses in specific areas. Like what they had to pull off to be allowed to use that whole park for an event like this and disc golf, I don't even understand how it's possible, because in Massachusetts it seems impossible to get a disc golf course in a freaking swamp even if you tried.
Yeah, it's just not the same level of respect that's given. And you obviously, I think everyone who appreciates this event owes a big kind of thank you to Silver Letma and Ralph Silver, to kind of give a little perspective, would be the Estonian equivalent of UC. Very much instrumental in bringing disc golf to Estonia, or at least making it much larger. He co-owns Disc Golf EE, which is the largest disc golf retailer and distributor in the country. He's obviously very closely connected with Latitude, and from what I understand, was very instrumental in Kristen Tatar, now Kristen Lett, and her sponsorships with Latitude 64. So there are a few guys who have really done decades of hard work creating relationships with the city, with the governments. It is not just because it's a small country. It's because there's a group of guys who have worked for a very, very long time with this goal in mind, and now it's coming to fruition. And I honestly agree with Matthias when he goes on and defends the course, because it's so easy for Gannon, Burr, or whoever to come over and not knowing any of that history, right? And just be like, oh, this course is too easy. And I kind of, I respect that. I should definitely listen to more of the Upshot to be a more informed podcaster myself. But it's good to hear that Matthias was defending the course, but also really, I don't know, kind of touching on a theory that resonates with you and I think is important for the sport as we continue to try to grow it and bring it into more urban areas.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I listened to all the videos talking about the conditions out here on this course and how the rain will just ruin this whole event, but if you didn't know anything about the conditions and you walked this course today, you would never notice that
like
something
a little
mud. Like it was just, yeah, it rained last week. That's why it's a bit muddy, but that's the full extent to the whole thing. It's like not bad at all. Like we've played in way worse conditions when it wasn't even talk about it. So No worries on that end.
And we're excited to be here. Well, I'll run quickly through my 2 weeks and in that same vein, give just touches on our tournaments and mainly Des Moines as a trivia. We had a historic finishing stretch in Des Moines for the Disc Mania Challenge. And I'm going to tell you what happened and then I'm going to see if you can guess any of these three parts of the answer, which is when did it happen last and who were the two players who did it. And the thing that happened was we had two unique winners in the same event for the first time.
Two first-time winners
since. And if you can guess the year or the event or the players.
It was like King of the Lake. Devin Owens and someone else.
Sarah Hokum, 2011.
Wow.
Back on the national tour. So I thought that was kind of a cool stat.
That was a good stat.
And also big shout out to the people who won. Ezra Aderhold, absolute grinder. We all remember when he came up with long hair, living in the back of his Prius, eating beans.
Yeah.
And he still eats beans. And, you know, he's definitely got a huge presence on the creator side of the disc golf world. And, you know, like his takes or don't like his takes, he is extremely impactful on our sport and has a big name and has contributed a lot to the content side, but also, in my opinion, one of the hardest working dudes on tour. I mean, that guy grinds.
He's been going back and forth between Europe and the US. He's played all the European events this year.
Yep.
Which is unbelievable.
And then he gets to the off season and picks like four or five of his buddies and does like 16 countries in 20 days or something. Don't you remember when he did that like two off seasons ago?
If I was 23 and single, I would probably do the same thing. Because why not? It sounds kind of awesome.
And it was just so cool. He had his brother on the bag, Judah, who used to tour with him and do him and Brody's vlogs a few years ago. So Judah's done the grind. And, I mean, the emotions at the end were really special. And you can tell how hard he's worked for it. He had his first touch of alcohol that night. He had a couple shots, which he said he was going to do. I'm happy for... I love to see someone who's just a really good example for how to be, like, a good athlete out there, and it pays off for them because those first wins are career-changing. And then on the FPO side, Cadence
Burge, Huntsville, Alabama,
with a comeback. Basically, I mean, she had the lead, she gave it up to Holland, and then
I watched the final nine of that, and it was
unbelievable. And her dad drove out with her dad and her grandfather after the third round to come out and watch, and she took it down.
It's almost like the finishes like that are when you think it's scripted.
Absolutely, yeah. Unbelievable. She birdies three of the last four holes after going bogey, bogey, double, bounces back, and beats Holland Hanley, who at this point is the Grim Reaper of FPO. I mean, she is the woman to beat this year. So it's just great to see someone who is coming up in the game once again. Like, uh-huh. I think even more to the point than Ezra. I mean, Ezra's a pretty established guy. I mean, winning or losing a tournament is not going to make or break his career at this point. I mean, he's made a good living for himself. But for Cadence, I mean, this confirms the risk that she's and taking she's is worth 18. It.
18.
18 years old.
The wildest thing is that Ratan and I have been dating for almost 6 years. And when I went down to Alabama for one of the first times, I saw this little long-haired, red-headed girl. And her dad were playing Bronze Spring. And immediately, I was like, she's going to be insanely good. Her talent was off the charts. And when I was on Discmania, I was like, Avery, I have somebody. You need to sign her. And luckily, Discmania did. So it's really special. And I mean, she's showing, like, even on a bunch of other events, she's just been storming.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and she continued to storm. Yeah. Well, so she absolutely was foreshadowing because of her performance at Preserve. And then her performance at U.S. Women's coming down the stretch, she had a chance. I mean, it was, you could tell.
It was the perfect lead up.
Yes, she was knocking on the door. So I just wanted to note that. I'm definitely trying to do better about talking about the things that we really want to talk
about.
What did
you, how was your PCS experience?
One thing about Cadence. Unsolicited advice is that her caddy, who is a famous golf content creator, Robbie C, shout out, he was in town because he played the creator challenge, which we did on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And he caddied for Cadence all three rounds.
That's right.
And he put out a video on his YouTube channel talking about his caddy experience with Cadence and kind of breaking down a bit how the final round went, what they were talking about and the emotions and all that. And it was probably one of the best disc golf videos I've ever watched.
Whoa.
So I would give everyone a recommendation to go check Robbie C out on YouTube and watch that caddy video with Cadence.
She shouted him out.
It was very good. Like, very, very good.
She definitely shouted him out in her post-round interview, saying that he was the reason she mentally felt like she was still in it.
Yeah, he must have some background in psychology or something, because the way he talked about what he was trying to do with her mentally on the course was like, I've never heard it like broken down and like strategically what to say at what point and how to approach every situation. He was like so on point with it, and I was like, wow, I need like a psychologist.
You need Robbie C as your caddy.
I mean,
if anybody's
anything can happen.
Anyone who caddies in tournaments or might be caddying for someone in the future, certainly worth a look. And I'm gonna go watch it because that sounds like a good use of my time.
Yeah, I don't know much about him, and that really made me want to know more about him.
Yeah. Well, big shout out to the unique first time winners at the Discmania Challenge. I had a lovely week in the humidity. We set off fireworks on 4th of July. We jumped off the dock. We did some fishing. Well, Simon did some fishing. And I started throwing a little bit around the house. We had a really solid area to throw from, or at least a yard to throw into over some fields. And for me, since my clean MRI result from Preserve, it's been a slow, steady ramping back into throwing. Sunday night, I drove back to Minneapolis. Monday night, I flew out with Paul McBeth and Jen Smiley, and I think a couple other. Gannon was there. Ezra was there. There was a decent amount of
all
us.
All from Minneapolis?
From Minneapolis. Oh, wow. Some of them had flown in from Des Moines, and then some of them had driven to Minneapolis. And so it was the easiest flights I've ever had to Europe, hands down. It was a 9:55 departure out of Minneapolis. Went to bed, I watched Bohemian Rhapsody. That's my unsolicited advice.
It's a great movie.
If you haven't seen Bohemian Rhapsody, I became about triple the fan of Queen as I was before I watched that movie. And Rami Malek is one of my favorite
really
actors.
Good.
He just killed it. I don't know why I took so long to watch that. It almost doesn't even feel like unsolicited advice, because I feel like if you're a good cultured person, you've already seen that movie.
On top of that, the Bob Dylan movie is really good.
Yeah, yes. I watched that on a flight to the West Coast, and everyone knows Bob Dylan, of course, but holy cow, I love Bob Dylan after I watched that movie. What a good freaking movie. Holy
and Timothy
cow.
Chalamet, I mean, he knew about the role 5 years in advance and learned to play guitar for the role. So talk about commitment
to
the craft.
Was that his voice?
Yeah, every performance was live.
Every single
live
one of it was him.
On screen. It was unbelievable.
It's crazy.
Actors are something else, and we are blessed to be in an age where we have dozens and dozens and dozens of fantastic
And then
actors.
AI is going to ruin it all.
Well, not if YouTube has anything to say about it. Did you see the announcement they came out with?
No.
Yeah, I like that announcement.
The paid, yeah, it's a huge, I think it's like absolutely like monumental announcement from YouTube, and it does make sense from their end financially as well. They essentially said that if you want to be monetized, they are now going to start scanning for any, it has to be original content with original audio and original video. And if they essentially catch or see or scan and find AI generated anything on your videos, you can't be monetized.
It sounds like the Wind Dragon song is going to be demonetized.
I think that was original enough.
Yeah,
though.
That's original
I
enough.
I think it's more like if you use an AI to make your videos. Yeah. Like all of it's just an AI actor, because that would be a way to like essentially like kind of play the algorithm. You just don't even make videos. You just have somebody else do or this AI do all of it. And so YouTube, from a financial, because at first I was like, wow, that seems like too good to be true. But then it makes sense, because you're cutting down on 40% of the channels you're giving money to, basically. In theory. So
good, though. It's very good.
Good on them. And so the flights were super smooth. I got 4 hours of 5 hours of sleep. We landed in Amsterdam direct from Minneapolis, and it was the perfect amount of time for having 4 to 5 hours of sleep. I didn't have to stay up a whole day because I got the plus 7 hours. We had an hour and a half in Amsterdam, and then we flew directly to Ålesund on the west coast of Norway for the PCS Open.
Shout out to that being a connection.
That's a really clutch
Unbelievable. That's what
Amsterdam
I'm saying.
Amsterdam to Ålesund.
One
what
stop. I had one stop to exactly where I needed to go, from 15 minutes from my house to the airport, and then 45 minutes from the airport to our Airbnb, which technically isn't an Airbnb. Shout out to Brage, who is the cousin of Sivert Uvedos. Have you guys both been out to that property? I know you've played at Sula.
Yeah, I have not played the other place.
PCS.
PCS twice.
Yeah. So I was there, and in 2023, I was also there as Paul Macbeth's cameraman. And in 2024, I was there with Joey Buckets and Eli Swanson and Luke Bain.
Luke Bain.
During our off week. So this was my third year in a row visiting the west coast of Norway. And boy, I hope that streak continues. I have no idea how long it will continue. But if I have any
That was a stinger not playing that tournament. That's one of my favorite events.
Absolutely unbelievable. And in 2023... because of the six-time status, we were basically offered up Sivert's cousin's house by his cousin, who said, yeah, me and my family, we're going to go take, well, my family is going to take a vacation. I'm going to go stay with Sivert, and you guys can stay in my house for the week, which is on the warm-up green of the course.
I
know that literally one glitch shot from hole one. It's the most clutch setup on tour for me. And we got to do it again this year. So shout out to Paul for allowing me and Eli and Maria to stay with him again. And it's a very, very special place. It's a very special tournament. And yeah, I remember in your luggage story, in 2023, we were there with one of our favorite guys, Avery Jenkins, and he got his bag lost. And this guy went all out. He took us, we went into the little shopping mall in Vestnest to that little sports store. And this guy, I think he spent $400 on clothes. I mean, he was just like, well, I need all this stuff. I need a raincoat. I need shoes. And he just, I mean, he got it all refunded. It was unbelievable. He took full advantage of
I should have took more advantage. Oh, that's the right thing to do.
He bawled out. This guy was head to toe, like walking out like a fresh Arc'teryx model, basically. Just everything that you could possibly buy, he was buying. He even bought me like two pairs of socks just because. He was just like, throw everything on the tab. I mean, that's how Avery rolls. So
we can go shopping with Simon after this.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you should do at this point if you really want to stick it to the airline.
It's Lufthansa.
Yeah, you can go.
Yeah.
I think there's nothing that's outside of the limits of possibility.
If you can justify it, like, for work too, then that'll give you a little bit more spending power. Just don't go buy like designer stuff.
So then it's not a tax write-off anymore, right? Because you get the refund. So then I can't buy it with my business credit card. So I have to like double think. Whew, it's gonna be tough.
Ask ChatGPT.
Yeah.
So the PCS Open is quite a special tournament. The course was pretty much the same. They tweaked a couple things, but it's a pretty technical course. And it's really impressive for how short it is, how it's pretty hard to shoot more than double digits under par. I mean, we did really not see a lot of double digit rounds out there this week. And it came down to the fireman from northern Wisconsin, Adam Hammes, who in Iowa went after a lackluster first round. He backed it up, averaging 1090 over his last two rounds, 13 down, 14 down.
I played with him the last round. It was wild.
1096 rated. He almost won the tournament. Mm-hmm. And then goes over and just picks up right where he left off. Starts off with a 10 down and backs it up with an 8 down right off the bat to be in the lead. And yeah, I mean, it came down to the wire. And shout out to one of the competitors in the European Championships Junior Division, Mio Hamalainen. Hamalainen. Who got second place. It was a really interesting decision. I don't know if you guys watched this, and this is what I wanted to talk about a little bit. At the end, Adam had about, I want to say, 180 feet left into the basket. And all he needed was a par, and he basically couldn't go OB because at this point, Gannon had thrown out of bounds. And so it was either Adam bogeys and they go to a playoff with Mio, or he pars or birdies. And everybody, I was standing right next to Nate Perkins, who was doing the on-course commentary, and both of us are looking at Adam, and we're like, why doesn't he go jump putt? Like, he doesn't have to throw this shot at all. And Adam knew the scores, and he parked it and ends up winning by two to get his fifth Elite Series of his career, second of the season. He's having a sneaky good year on tour. I mean, yeah. He has to be top five in points, if not even higher than that.
He's probably
second.
Second or third.
So that's super impressive to me. And then on the FPO side, Evelina, the three-peat. Three tournaments in a row, U.S. Women's, European Championships, and the PCS Open. So she got on quite a little streak. Not to be overlooked was a pretty sad final round from the queen of disc golf, Kristin Lett. And this brings my second point of discussion, which is, what do we think is going through her head? We've just seen some pretty lackluster rounds out of Kristin, and I have some difficulty like fully judging someone who's this good and been this good for so long, because the expectations are just sky high. But where it really kind of makes sense to me is listening to her press conferences. I mean, she sounds tired. She sounds like she's been dealing with a little bit of sickness and injury and some burnout. And I wondered if you guys had noticed that at any point this year watching coverage, and what you thought might be part of the cause, or if it's just the way golf goes sometimes.
Yeah, I think me included and other people often forget that she's a mom and she's constantly away from her family and her home country. I mean, I literally had to make the U.S. my home for me to be able to like mentally keep doing this, because I'm just someone who really needs home base, who needs breaks. And since I really know what it feels like, I just assume that Kristen probably feels similarly, that you have to be a very specific type of person to enjoy this road life and this on the go kind of no breaks, full send to every stop on tour. And I don't think most people would not thrive.
So with like Kristen that. Too, I would say, relatively speaking, I think, would you say Kristen's the biggest star in disc golf in terms of like,
yes,
when she comes here, she probably feels she's legitimately famous. Well, I mean, I'm driving down the street on my scooter and I see Kristen Tatar billboards.
Yep.
So there's a ton of pressure there.
I mean,
plus her rise is pretty recent, like
2019 was when she won US Women's.
And I think most people in Estonia coming up from that weren't necessarily expecting to be a superstar in disc golf. So it's like, I'm sure she's incredibly grateful and disc golf has given her so much, but to say that she expected that I would say no one did.
Yeah. I mean, she put in a level of discipline and a game style that the FPO division hadn't quite seen. And I have to imagine that some of the young players now who are challenging her definitely watched her in those years and were impressed and inspired to see the level raised in the FPO division. Because in my eyes, it's absolutely obvious that she raised the level and raised the bar for winning Elite Series in the FPO division. I think it's when she's at her best and she's firing on all cylinders. I mean, you have to play almost 10-30 to win. I mean, Silva shot 10-20 for the entire week of Music City Open and lost in a playoff.
It's wild. It's really crazy. It's,
yeah, it also, not only all the traveling and time away from home and your family, but on top of that, I think it takes a specific type of person to also, I don't know what the right word is, but to thrive at the top, like to be like so dominant at something and to like gain energy from it, you got to be like at least somewhat like, I can't think of a better word. So it's like egotistic,
yeah,
a bit.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Like, I think Kristen is just too nice in some ways. Mm-hmm. She's just real and so nice that I don't think she like loves just being like lifted up like this by everyone. Like, it's tough to deal with. Like, then, I could totally relate to that. Mm-hmm. I'm not.
Estonians like bad. In the summer to relax and go to a summer cottage away from everybody, to go to the sauna and just have like a relaxed, easy life.
Yeah, we're looking.
That's not what Kristen gets to do.
No, it's not. And I mean, it's also too the dominance that she's displayed and the people that she's beaten, and then this year to finally see those people winning. I mean, Kristen's been interviewed as a second place finisher at almost every pro tour this year. And I think it's good to interview the second place finishers. And it's certainly coincidence that they've started to do that more. But it's just funny that like the moment she starts to get beat, now everybody wants to know how she feels about losing to Silva and finally Silva getting the monkey off the back or losing to this person. And I bet she gets tired of it. I bet she gets tired of like giving the second place interviews and when it's not going exactly the way she wants. And I mean, I'm sure she can look at this whole season as kind of like a slow pile up to that. And I guarantee you Champions Cup didn't help at all. With a major in the palm of her hand coming down the stretch. So it's certainly interesting to see.
Kristen, if you're listening, my advice is just screw the haters. Mm-hmm. Do your thing.
She's also, speaking of doing her thing, she has worked a ton on her brand. And she announced earlier this spring that she was essentially parting ways with her manager, who also happens to be the organizer of this event, Matthias. And I guarantee you that puts more on her plate. She came out with her first athletic line of clothing. She is a huge role model. She almost has this like Kobe factor, not just in Estonia, but for all the women. I mean, if you're going to an event and you're a woman or a girl spectator, Kristen is like easily at the top of your list of like who you want to see at that event. You're going to see Kristen. And I think that when Paul McBeth was dominating, it was similar in MPO. Mm-hmm. But I think it's been about 10 years since we've had somebody dominate the MPO division in that way that made them such the reason you were going. And everybody wondered like, oh, why did she go play? Why didn't she drop an event or two? Right? And everybody always asked that to Kobe. And he always used to say, well, you never know who's in the stands, who's going to watch. And maybe that's the only game they get to see all year. And they want to come and see me on the bench. And I think she does take some responsibility to be there as the figure that she is for the sport. And I believe that when she's not at an FPO event, that win feels less legit. Because you didn't beat Kristen.
I'd say that's true. The tournaments that I've won that Paul or Ricky weren't there didn't feel as good.
Mm-hmm. So just interesting notes. She struggled last week as well on the putting green at the Krokol Open. It'll be interesting to see how she handles the hometown pressure. I thought it was interesting to note that she is not on the Team Estonia superstar team that just got announced today for the Cool Bet Superstar Challenge tomorrow. It's Katy Tate, Kaidi Alsalu, Albert Tom, and Silver. And I wonder if that move, because I was informed that she is the one who picked that team, I wonder if that was a deliberate initial move or maybe a switch to get her some additional rest. But yeah, I can't imagine the pressure she's under, whether it's internal or external, coming into this event. And especially off of, yeah, I mean, the last time she won a tournament was the Music City Open.
So she's, and Waco, she's still having a really good year.
Yep.
Still having a, quote, off year, and you're still winning multiple events, and she's still the favorite for every
My
event.
Last win was also the Music City Open, by the way.
Yeah. What was your last win?
Oh boy, European Open.
That was a good one, though.
That was a good one. Or Discmania Open, if you want to count that.
Yeah, Prince Edward mm-hmm. Island. Mm-hmm. So
let's move it along.
Let's move it. So for
the big one,
the Krokol.
I want to talk about how I shed a tear yesterday.
Oh yeah.
Simon, I did shed too. A tear
the
as
final
well.
Event of our 3-week break south of Oslo, Norway, the number one disc golf course in the world, Krokol, as it's pronounced correctly.
That's how you say it?
Krokol. Yes.
You take both the O's and just switch them to U's.
Krokol.
Krokol. A former 18-hole ball golf course that was turned into a 9-hole golf course and an 18-hole disc golf course on the other side. A lot of these European events I have a very personal connection to simply from 2023, not only traveling to all those events, but interviewing all of the staff and getting the entire story behind each and every one of those properties. So I could talk longer than we have time for, but it's a very good group of guys who have put in a really beautiful piece of property that you have played.
Yeah, I've played it two times now.
You played it way back.
I'm going next
2019.
Year.
Oh,
I'm announcing it now.
Okay, so I had like at least 10 Crushed Pepper fans come up to me, and I was on bottom cards. We'll get to my play in a second, but I had at least 10 Crushed Pepper fans who came up to me and said, "Joey, it's so great to see you. We love the podcast. Next year, will you please tell the Crush boys to come out to Norway because Oslo is waiting for them?" So I passed that along.
I can't wait to go. It's such an easy flight to Boston, Oslo. It's like, come on.
And Oslo is a world-class city, in my opinion. Me and Schlebach, Matt Schlebach, and
Maria. I followed his stories on Instagram. He did not hold back in posting, so I have definitely enjoyed the...
Did you see our seafood platter?
Oh, yeah. I saw everything.
Wow.
You made a lot of appearances on his stories.
We had a great time. It all was so serendipitous at the baggage claim.
Was that his first time in Europe, or has he been...
I think it's his first time in Europe. And this guy is going with Gannon after this to China.
Oh, that's right. The World Games.
Yeah. So he's got this 5-week trip in Europe and then the World Games at the foothills of the giant panda reserves out in it's Western occupied China or like populated China because it's really not Western China. If you look at a map, it's like right in the middle. But where all the people live, it's on the west side.
Yeah.
So that's pretty crazy. We had a great time in Oslo. The course is unbelievable. It's beautiful. It has a level of manicuring that you just can't get without a pre-existing ball golf course or like cactus rock level work. I mean, it would take millions of dollars to get a disc golf course into that kind of shape. So the fact that they didn't really start on a blank slate. They had, cut fairways through what is now a protected forest. So that golf course got built about 2 years before the Norwegian government protected the forest in the golf course and all of the forest around it.
It's the Milo of Europe.
You can't touch any of it at all. So the fact that there's even a golf course there is super lucky. It was a beautiful place. It was a fantastic event. We stayed in the same place we did last year and had one of the crazier steak nights. We had, shout out to Martin, who is a professional chef in Oslo.
Oh, Martin cooked. Nice.
Martin, he brought 2 full loaves of like the focaccia bread, and then it was like, 10 steaks, 20 chicken breasts, and an entire salmon. Like the full fish came into the kitchen. And him and Big T and his buddy Marius, they cooked for almost 20 of us.
Marius is a hoot.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I remember him.
Yep, Marius and Martin, dude. They went hard. They mentioned that they had cooked for you.
Yeah, they invited Ritana, my dad, and myself to dinner at their house.
Yeah.
And it was an amazing experience. Cooked steak, homemade ice cream, homemade everything. It was absolutely delicious. Yeah, Martin, Henrik, Marius, those guys are awesome over there in Norway.
And he messaged me during the preserve about this. So he was like super excited to do it, really ahead of his planning. So I was, at first I had no idea who I was talking to. And by the end of it, I was so glad that I had responded to those messages. So we had a great time off the course. I'll give a minute on me, and then we're going to go to the tournament. And then we'll mail. So I was ramping in to playing disc golf, and PCS was basically a slight bit eager. I went from throwing 3 days with days of rest in between in Des Moines to throwing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at PCS. And essentially the biggest risk right now is all these little muscles around the healed bone that are essentially not used to this pretty snappy little motion that's happening when you do the reach back to the pull through. And so by the end of round one, the back was in some decent pain, not like the sharp pain, but just like overall, like pretty sore. And so unfortunately, I made the decision to drop out of the last 2 rounds of PCS, and I was down. I was not feeling good after the amount of ramp up I had done. I was just like, I had no hope in my mind that I was going to be able to play Crokle, that I was going to be able to compete here or next week. I was just completely pessimistic because I thought, well, if I just did all this ramp up and I can't handle that load, like, what is, I mean, how is this going to get better next week? And just a big shout out to Jonas and Jared. And I talked to Jonas specifically, and he just said, hey, you just jumped the gun a little bit on your practice. And they gave me a really good plan for Crokle. They said, you're going to rest. And then on Wednesday, you're going to throw a little bit. And then on Thursday, you're going to rest again. And you're going to limit yourself when you throw in the tournament. And so I threw field work on Wednesday. On Thursday, I went out and putted and only threw forehands on the course where I knew I was going to throw forehands. And I would say I'm an 80% backhand player. And then I went into the tournament this weekend. My only goal was to finish, and my rule was no more than 20 backhands per round. So flipping my percentages of forehand to backhand on its head.
Wow.
Fortunately, the forehand has never bothered me at any point of this injury, so those muscles were still like strong and used to that load. So yeah, I threw a ton of forehands. I averaged a cool 965 through the first two rounds of the tournament. But third round, I shot under par, and for the first time in 25 weeks, I was throwing backhands all the way through the round under my 20 limit, but they felt good and they felt powerful all of a sudden. And there was just like, it was like so much amazing emotion for shooting 14 over in three rounds. But I'm just so proud of my commitment to the routine and my trust in my team, especially after the way I felt on the PCS Open week. And yeah, I finished my first tournament. I played my first second round of a tournament in the whole season. And so I just appreciate anybody who sent me messages all year. I've gotten a lot of them, and it's been super hard, honestly. My dream is to be a professional disc golf player, and I definitely felt like I put in a lot of work to deserve a really good shot at that this year. And to kind of have the first half of the season axed off after how hard I worked to get a full tour card, there was a part of me that didn't believe I was going to play this year. And that was very real at PCS. I basically thought, well, if I can't play these majors, then like I should just be done. So the fact that I was able to make it through three rounds, and today I feel great, and tomorrow I might throw a bit. But yeah, it was just, it was a dream weekend for Joey on the playing field.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Congrats, Joey.
We're proud too.
Thanks. So, tournament time. Quickly.
We were also proud.
Quickly. Shout out to Holland for winning again. Cadence.
Shout out to Cadence.
Cadence stormed back 9-under hot round.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool. But, oh my gosh. Three-way playoff between Mauri Vilman, Jakob Samarad, and Benjamin Callaway.
Benjamin.
And it was looking like it
Benji, according to the commentator. Did you know he called him Benji?
Oh, Benji.
Esa Pekka is one of my favorites. I got to give a shout out to Esa.
If he just made that up on the fly, then I think it's cool.
Well, and his call out to Andrew Gummy Bear. I did that. And I think this crew of Esa, Brian, and Nate is my favorite of the year. And for me, it's not even close. Like, there's no debate. It is my favorite live commentary to watch. So, quick shout out to them. Continue.
What was I saying?
Benjamin, the three-way playoff.
Three-way playoff. Yeah, there could have been way more people in the playoff. For a little while, it was shaping up that it almost could have been like a five- or a six-way playoff.
Gannon Burr.
Gannon, Ricky.
Missed a 150-foot upshot.
Yeah.
Lowry could have been right there.
But it came down to the three. Mauri checked out in the first hole.
On the first throw.
The first throw.
Do you know what disc he threw off the tee? What was that thing? That's a mayhem? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mayhem, wow.
Looked like a terrible shot compared to how easy Ben and Jakub made that freaking tee shot look 20 times in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is when you get there, you do realize how close you have to push. If you're not going to throw a spike hyzer, if you're going to throw a shot that is most likely going to get a skip, you do have to push it to those trees and probably miss them 15 to 20 feet short. So
because it's easy to leak left otherwise.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, and or skip left, basically, is really how it happens. I mean, you can land right in the middle and you just shoot out of bounds left.
The hole's way harder than they made it look.
The tee shot. The tee shot. Way harder. And we do have to talk about the course. My only gripe with the course is the tee pads. I think the surface is fantastic, but I think as far as filming goes and playing, a lot of those tees aren't safe. There's just crazy drop-offs off the backside or the front side.
Not James Conrad approved.
And that's funny you say that because he was one of our practice round guests.
Yeah, I watched it.
So I got to see the full exposure of the lack of space on those tee pads. And hole two, which I'm going to take partial credit for because in 2023, I told them that was the most egregious on the course and they added this beautiful backing to it with a little slot to the left because I said, if you really love your cameraman, you're going to give us a little slot to the back left of the tee and it's the best tee on the course and I want them to make every other tee pad like that because if you, and it's really, there's not that many people.
I want them to thank me.
No, I want them to change the tees. I think that it's unless you're a throw cam or you're really meticulous about watching the live, it's pretty hard to see that it wasn't easy to film. But you film one practice round out there and you're like standing 2 feet below or 3 or 4 feet below the surface.
Huge shout out to Ben Callaway for taking his first Pro Tour win. That was the tear that I shedded. It was the first time since Matty O won that I felt that way about somebody winning. Because Ben Callaway is like 37 or 38 years old. And my preserve story that I alluded to earlier in the episode was I found out that Ben's probably not touring next year.
Maybe he is now.
He might be now. But I felt bad because I said, like, there's always next year when he, like, didn't birdie a hole at preserve. He's like, nope, there's no next year. And it's just a huge sacrifice because he has a wife and a daughter and he's out there grinding. And I've stayed with Ben a few times in Michigan. Shout out to the Lacey Inn. And I remember a conversation between Nico and himself. And he's like, every morning I look myself in the mirror. I say, I can effing do it. Like when it comes to like winning a tournament. And he's been really close a lot of times.
Jonesboro.
Like Jonesboro, Maple Hill. Champions Cup. Like there's a pretty good handful of tournaments where he's been close. And it's always just an insane feeling when you're able to like push through and actually do it. And it was eventful. He made it as hard as he possibly could.
Yeah, he had plenty of space.
And he had some divine intervention as well. If you look at his shot on hole 17, yeah. Completely out of bounds and like one of the best roll-ins I think I've ever seen.
Yep. Yeah, that was a break that warrants 10 bad breaks in return.
Totally, totally. And then unfortunately misses the island, but he did enough to get it done. And it was amazing to see him pull through. It was like, for me, it was like justice served. And it would have been great for Jakob. Obviously, it would have been great for Mowry. But for something about Ben winning just made me
He's
really
been grinding.
Happy.
He totally deserves it. And even just, I was at Jonesboro this year, and he he won that tournament as an A-tier. And he made a point of putting that on his schedule as like a sentimental thing. And dominated to the win. And I find it really curious, interesting, cute. His touring group, I don't know if you saw his post from PCS, Fins with Benefits.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just, I think there's plenty of unique touring groups, but it's certainly funny. I mean, he's basically a Finn at this point. He tours in a car with four Finns, and he's done it for 3 years at least, and that's their little squad. And they were so stoked for him at the end. I was just so happy.
I'm excited to congratulate him because I was playing him at the final round with him at the final round in Des Moines. And shout out Jerry Patterson's, the TD of the Kansas City Wide Open. He was following my card, and he was, I think it was like hole eight. He was like walking across the tee pad to walk up the hill. And I'm like, oh, Jerry. I gave him a hug. And then Ben looks over at me. He's like, Eagle, I didn't know you gave people hugs. And I'm like, what? It's like, I'm a human. He's like, yeah, I never thought you were that kind of person. So I got to go up and give Ben a hug.
Give Ben a hug.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was an interesting end to the tournament. It was a bit of a, I'm going to say it. It was a bit of a buzzkill to have the tournament end the way that it ended.
So this is a controversial take. I liked it. There was no luck involved, and they had to throw shots under pressure the entire time until somebody messed up.
Yeah, so my
one tweet before you say anything, the one way they can make that hole better is on the second shot, you have an early left landing zone that you could throw like a little chip shot if you're scared of going long, either hazard or something, and a long landing zone that you'd have to push a little bit further on. At least for like a playoff instance, there's going to be a little bit more decision making and you're going to be forced to maybe get a little bit more uncomfortable. Sure. That's how I would fix that hole.
So there's been a couple of things I've been reading online in the last couple of days, and I am fortunate enough to have a connection with the LOC, the staff on the ground, and there's just a couple of misconceptions I want to correct. The first thing I've been hearing is the amount of complaining about how late this hole was put in to the practice. And so this is the only part of the course that is on the existing 9-hole golf course. And so in order for 18 to be in play, they have to shut down the entire property, which they don't do for the practice days so that the golfers can still play and we can still practice. So 18 went in on Wednesday night. For anybody saying, well, it should have been there all week. Okay, you find me the $10,000 extra dollars to put up to shut that course down. It's just not like,
it's not as
easy as it seems.
You just wish the course would be like cooler.
No, for sure. But it is a golf course. So that is where they make their money. And to kick golf patrons out for 4 extra mm-hmm. days is a lot of money. And then the second thing is that 2 years ago, the hole was exactly the same, except for the basket placement. The basket was only about, you played it. You remember?
It was right on the water. It was
right on the water.
I remember it being scary.
Yes, and it actually changed the hole because you couldn't bail out with an easy upshot and have a tap in. If you wanted to play that upshot
So here's the story.
This is what you don't know. So this is what you don't know. So Wednesday night, they have to come in and set all this up, and they have to wait until sunset so that all the golfers are off the property. So they set up hole 18 on Wednesday night in about 20 minutes. They are doing the OB. They bring the basket in, and they put it down, just set it down in the spot while they're stringing the rest of the OB. In that time, 3 or 4 groups played the hole, and then they finished stringing the OB, and the staff went and measured, and the intent was to put the basket in the same exact place from last year, and that's what they did. They moved it back. 3 more groups played. It was like 11:30 at night. Everybody went home. They came back the next morning, and the basket had been moved back to the spot, and it wasn't a spot. It was just where they had left it so they could go string the OB. It just got left there, and then they were going to put it in its exact spot, which might not seem like a lot. It's probably a 15-foot move. It completely changes the hole.
Oh, my gosh.
Completely. And so
somebody throws it in the water.
So they move the basket. So the basket was moved by an official, and when the staff spoke to the official about the move, the answer was basically, well, 4 groups played it wrong last night while you guys were stringing. And so therefore, we moved it back. And the staff's response was essentially, well, as many groups played it wrong as played it right at 11:30 last night. And how is this done without like cross-referencing?
That's some booty cheeks.
And
right
then
there.
The answer, and at that point, it's 11 a.m. on Thursday when this discussion is happening, or 9:30. And so the final official practice round has already started, and essentially the officials said you can't move it back. And I just need to make sure that that is heard, because for everybody who's criticizing how boring 18 was, you don't realize that the intent for that hole is not what showed up on coverage. And the reason that the hole isn't what it was does not fall on the local TDs and the staff who are putting this event on, because they had a much more entertaining hole in mind. And even also had the suggestion to do 13 and 14 as the playoff before the DGPT.
Why can't we just play the course as playoff holes?
You know, that's a good question. I think so. The DGPT made a point to the staff that 18 was the best hole for the spectators, not having to be relocated like every other hole. And that makes sense to me. And 18, in its intended layout, was going to be fantastic. But instead, it ended up being essentially like just a little bit of a, I don't even know, like a circus, where it was just like, if the tee shot landed in bounds in that playoff, we just kind of like tuned out for 5 minutes and then waited till putts happened. And if that had gone two more holes or three more holes, you would have started to run out of light. And so it was fortunate in a way, almost Conrad throw-in style, the way that the Conrad throw-in in 2021 kind of saved the look of that World Championships. The fact that it ended on the fifth time through instead of the eighth or the ninth or the tenth time through definitely saved a little bit of embarrassment.
Yeah.
But it was a pretty blatant miss, in my opinion, and one of those moments where I understand that the rules apply, but in some cases you have to make the right decision.
The
with
wild
your gut.
Thing is, hypothetically, if Maori hung in the playoff, he would have missed his flight.
Yep, and he got on the same flight as me instead.
Wow, we are like almost in crushed pepper XL territory. So we promised mail.
Yeah. Do you think that was the most professional post-round interview I've ever heard in any sport? It felt like he had prepared for that his whole life.
What, Ben?
Yeah.
It was great.
He looked right in the
camera.
That's
when I cried.
To his daughter. I mean, that was unbelievable. He was so poised. I mean, that's just Ben. He's a class act. He's so professional. But I was, even in that moment of like total emotion, he was so composed and just a total class act.
Is he one of the oldest, is he the oldest player ever to win like an elite series in the modern day?
You mean like their first,
like say in the last 10 to 15 years? Because how obviously I think like Climo probably did, but it was different back then.
How old is he?
Cam Todd.
37. Cam Todd.
Cam Todd winning worlds.
Or no, he won GBO.
Oh,
GBO
yeah.
In like 2016 or something.
2016.
Wow.
I think Cam Todd's probably the other person, and that's it.
That's nuts.
Mm-hmm. It's like, if you look at Ben Callaway, you're not going to think he's old. Like, he does not come across as an old guy.
He's not old.
He's older than almost everybody we play with.
Yeah, but he's still in his 30s.
It's like basketball players. Like, if someone's over 30... It's like they're not old, but basketball standards, they're old.
Yeah.
Sports old. Wow.
I agree. Shout out Ben Callaway. I was so happy to see him win. I cried. I don't even know him that well, but whenever we hang out, it's always a good time.
Mm-hmm.
My best Callaway story is last year at the Preserve, we happened to randomly stay in the same hotel. And we had breakfast together, a couple of dinners together. And on Sunday morning, at some point the topic of playing golf came up, that we both enjoy playing golf. And on Sunday morning, I was like, hey, want to do like an 8 a.m. tee time of 18 holes of golf before our final round? Because we were both kind of sucking at the tournament. So Calvin and I drove like 45 minutes.
Calvin?
Callaway.
Did I say Calvin?
I think you said Calvin.
Oh, God. Okay, I'm tired. jet lagged. No, Ben and I drove like 45 minutes outside of St. Cloud in the wrong direction of where the course would go to a golf course at 8 in the morning. And we played 18 holes of golf together and then drove to the preserve and played 18 holes of disc golf for the final round of the 2024 preserve. And that was one of the more wild things I've ever done pre-round as a warm-up, because everyone has ever played 18 holes of golf. It's something. So shout out Ben Calloway. That was a lot of fun. Good memory on tour.
We've had some really nice deserving winners the last month.
Monkeys just off the back.
Yeah, just people who deserve big wins, and they did it. And
it's not a good year for the monkeys.
Mm-mm. Yeah, they're getting chucked.
Yeah.
That's another good name.
Bad year for the monkeys.
Bad year for the monkeys. I'm going to do 10 seconds on fantasy. We've got Joey in the lead at 7,157. Simon, who has absolutely closed the gap at 6,976, thanks to Holland Hanley racking up
and
some
Silva
wins
last week. Can
you stop saying my score?
All right, that's it.
Yeah, it's between Joey and Simon.
It is between Joey and Simon. If Eagle re-enters the conversation, we'll make note.
Okay.
And I have an email right here queued up.
Email. All right, let's finish up with the email and then it's dinner time.
This email is from Max Kerrigan. Hi, guys. Disc golf junkie since 1999 over here. Question for Simon. As a Canadian, I've always been curious about your dual citizenship and about your connection to Salt Spring Island, the site of your first ace on what may be one of Canada's most legendary courses. Are you Canadian on your mom's side? Cheers, and keep up all your good work growing the sport, fellas. Love the content and insight. I've already bought some Wild Brine and Toe Socks.
I love to hear it. Shout out Wild Brine and Toe Socks. I had to get socks with my luggage reimbursement, and my goodness, it was terrible. Awful. I just washed my toe socks over again because I couldn't handle having my sock or my foot in a normal sock.
I don't use a single pair of those regular socks anymore. And I did for a half day. Paul got some complimentary Delta socks and I put them on and it was
not good.
Hate at first feel.
Really bad.
All right, you got to answer your question.
I am Canadian on my dad's side, first of all. And my dad's brother used to live in Vancouver. So we would do, I think, about yearly, maybe every other year as kids. We would fly with my dad to visit his brother in Vancouver and make it a bit of a disc golf trip as well. And that was paradise for me because Vancouver has disc golf courses, which where I grew up in Bremen, Germany, did not. So I didn't get my actual first permanent disc golf course until like 2009 or something. Or 2007, maybe.
Is this this like famous video of you as a kid like getting an ace on a tone pole?
That is the day. So there is a video of me and my dad doing commentary on a way back then video that my uncle took. My uncle used to be a lot into fun little disc golf videos, and back then with the camcorders he would cut together some fun stuff. Shout out Pete, by the way. Uncle Pete, absolute disc golf legend in Canada.
Is this the uncle that you stayed with when you had your visa issues?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Well, he moved back to just outside of Montreal in Sherbrooke. I don't know how long ago. I'm so bad at remembering times, but yeah, he lived there for a while taking care of his mom, my grandma. But yeah, no, he lived in Vancouver. He was working there, and for me, that was like disc golf paradise. Shout out Queen Elizabeth Park, which is a tiny little nine-hole track that I spent so much time on as a kid, just throwing shots and playing 10 to 15 rounds a day on. And Salt Spring Island, you know, outside of Vancouver, is a bunch of different islands. And I think most of them have a disc golf course on them. And Salt Spring Island is one of them. And I got my first ever hole in one there, which was not on a basket. It was on a tonal. Shout out tonals. So you just hear like a ding when you get it. And those island courses are amazing. Like the longest hole is like 180 feet. But the line to get there is just like almost physically impossible. You have to like total trick shot every hole. And it's just such fun disc golf, so old school. And actually the more famous course out there is Pender Island, which is famous for just being off of boulders and cliffs and through the tightest woods. Like there's like a 120 foot hole where there's just no gap, and it's basically just good luck.
Amazing. Throwing a,
I don't know, you just have to get creative there. And that's kind of how I grew up with disc golf. Disc golf for me was never about competing or really getting better. It was more about just family trips, fun, hanging out, and chucking discs. And I feel like I never truly lost that. Of course, nowadays everything's more official and serious, but I think at heart, disc golf is for me always a family fun thing to do. And competition is secondary.
I think we see that in every practice round when you start to take the just like some shots out, not even just like repeating the same shot, just like finding a way to entertain yourself on every hole. And it's cool you mentioned a non-basket ace. Have you had a non-basket ace? I've had one non-basket ace in my life in Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates. They don't have baskets on their course, and they use palm trees as the basket, and they have a laser pointer, and they point out which is the tree that you're throwing to. And I have a 320 foot ace with a C-line MT3.
The courses I played as a kid, you would not believe what we used as baskets. Like a tree was like a great basket for us. Like we would have trash cans, light posts, sometimes just like a random rock in a field. Like we would get as creative as needed. And we were literally a group of like 5 to 10 guys where I grew up. I was like the only child, of course. And we were just a bunch of weirdos in a freaking park throwing at trees.
And this is in Bremen.
In Bremen, yeah. We were literally just throwing plastic at trees. And I bet everyone who was looking at us was just like, what happened to these people?
I mean, that's how I started throwing frisbees when I was 5, was my neighbor brought me a matching ultimate frisbee. And he said, okay, we're going to see how many throws it takes us to get around the block. And that was the start of aiming at anything.
It's really fun.
It's great. Do you have a non-basket ace, or are they all on chains?
All on chains. I came into the sport just right at the tail end of the tone pole era. I say maybe played like 1 or 2 tone pole courses in my life.
In Colorado?
Like in Colorado, yeah. There was a course called the Blair Witch that was tone pole. But I had the luxury of discriminating against tone poles.
I didn't know they were so widespread.
Yeah, I mean, in more rural places for sure. But like Colorado, like in the early days, was kind of like a hot spot for like steady ed. So like they brought baskets to Colorado pretty early in the advent of disc golf. So there wasn't too many. So I don't have any good tone pole stories, unfortunately.
Well, we're past the XL segment.
This might be the biggest crushed pepper episode ever,
and you know it's always because of me.
And we had zero notes,
and we could keep going, but
we could
talk for another.
But
2 hours.
We have weekly episodes now, so it won't be so much of a
if
haul.
Simon's video gets 100,000 likes, we're gonna do it every day
at Worlds.
At World
daily recaps.
If which video needs to get 100,000 likes, they need to know.
Yeah, the warm-up video for European Disc Golf Festival.
100,000
posted on Thursday.
100,000 likes.
How unrealistic is that?
Very.
Okay. Are you guys ready to finish?
I'm ready to name.
Oh, okay. So let's finish with a Simon Shines.
Ooh.
Simon Shines.
Because I know Simon Wines was legendary and highly needed, but it's time to shine some light on some positive things. And I want to start with something I discovered since I've had kids on my favorite flavor in the world. And maybe if you can, while I'm blabbering, you guys can think of what your favorite flavor is to really send everyone off with just something amazing. All right, this is my favorite flavor in the world. When I make pancakes in the morning for my kids and I pour a bit of maple syrup on their pancake or plate, and then to avoid drops of maple syrup, you take your finger at the maple syrup little glass thing, mm-hmm. and kind of avoid that drop runs out, and then you lick your finger to lick the maple syrup off. And this is like the first flavor of the morning. This is pre-brushing your teeth or anything. So your mouth kind of just feels like, ugh, you know, that morning mouth feeling. It's terrible. And then you put a drop of maple syrup. Oh, my God. That might be my favorite flavor in the world. That drop in the morning.
Wow. That is special.
Wow, I don't know if I can beat that. I know exactly what I know what you mean, but I've never thought of it as my favorite flavor in the world.
Well, if you can't think of anything, then we'll just leave you with this, and I recommend trying that.
Papaya in Hawaii.
It might only work if you have kids though, and it's the drop that feeds your kids.
Papaya in Hawaii.
That or passion fruit.
You were saying earlier that you don't want to try poke bowls outside of Hawaii. Yeah. Now. It's just been too...
I got it too good.
You got
I
it.
I got it too good.
Too good. Well, my current favorite flavor right now is... Like, it's been for a while. It's the Mackinac Island fudge, which is a flavor of ice cream, but for me it's just like the vanilla ice cream with like the nice chunk of chocolate, like the crunch and like the, like right when it hits your mouth you've got like the melting vanilla and then that really great bite of a big piece of chocolate chip. And Mackinac Island fudge has been my favorite flavor of ice cream since I was probably 6 years old, and that is by far my favorite flavor in the world, that little combination. It's pretty simple, vanilla and chocolate, but...
Now I'm hungry.
Well,
I'm hungry. Good night.
What's the name? Bad Year for Monkeys?
Bad Year for the Monkeys is pretty good.
Yeah, that's good.
Bad Year for the Monkeys.
Uh-huh.
I like it.
All right, you Scoville units, thank you for sticking with us for... almost 100 minutes here.
What?
In about 30 seconds. So we will hopefully see you next week and wish all three of us, first time I can say that, luck this weekend in the second major of the year.
Major time.
Deuces. That is disgusting, Joey. Leave that in, Will.
Oh, the new timeline.